The case of an accused killer now before the courts, charged in the deaths of four people. His actions, police say, motivated by hate.
The dead allegedly targeted for their Muslim faith. Friends, loved ones, and the wider community preparing to honor their memory and show solidarity. Good evening. Outside the courthouse in London, the flags are at half-mast in honor of the lives lost.
A mother, father, daughter, and grandmother. CTV's John Woodward is live with more. John.
Nathan, today is the first time anyone outside the justice system has seen Nathaniel Veltman. As the court began its hearing today, the first step in what may be a very long process. 20-year-old Nathaniel Veltman wore a face mask and an orange jumpsuit as he appeared in a London courthouse Thursday, giving simple, short answers when called upon by the judge.
Today was a five-minute appearance. Unless this man, this accused, pleads guilty in the very near future, this process is not going to be over months, it's going to be over years.
Years as authorities battle in court over what happened Sunday night. Four members of the same family killed and a 9-year-old boy grievously injured, hit by a pickup truck whose driver, say police, was motivated by hate. Relatives identified the deceased as Salman Afzal, his wife Medea Salman, their daughter Yumna Salman, and her 74-year-old grandmother Talat Afzal, targeted, police say, because of their Muslim faith. The community reeling, but also feeling hope as so many rush to express solidarity, an online fundraiser to support the sole survivor, raising more than $700,000.
They are all concerned and sending love and support, so it's very, very relieving to see that how many people are standing by us during this time.
Even Veltman's family, Veltman's mother, telling CTV News in an email, "I am deeply grieved by the heinous crime that was committed this last weekend. I am praying for the victims and the family members of the victims, and my heartfelt prayers will continue for all that are affected by this tragedy." Friends tell CTV News Veltman was close with his great-grandmother. She died 2 days before the crash. One witness said he was arrested while laughing.
I would say the evidence on the whole suggests more that we just have people who have very troubled lives. And out of their troubled lives, they're seeking certainty and a really greater dramatic sense of purpose.
Others cautious, saying there is still much we don't know.
The question still remains, why this Muslim family? Why was he dressed a certain way? Which suggests to me that there are kind of might be other ideological parameters at play here.
The previous owner of a pickup Veltman bought in May told CTV News he was shocked that it may have been used in the crime. Many in the community calling for terror charges to be laid. The funeral for the family will take place on Saturday with an early viewing for relatives only and then a procession through London streets followed by prayers and then a burial at the London Islamic Cemetery. Reporting live, I'm John Woodward in Toronto. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, John. Saturday's funeral will be preceded by a gathering tomorrow.
A multi-faith march with a message of unity and compassion. CTV's Omar Sachedina is live in London tonight. And Omar, this will be an emotional couple of days for that community.
Absolutely. And, you know, tomorrow's gathering, an extension of what we've been seeing all day, you know, or all week, I should say. People of all stripes coming together and standing shoulder to shoulder to lean on each other during this difficult time. You heard John there mention the key points of the funeral service on Saturday, although it appears that the procession right now might be up in the air because of the logistical challenges. But we do know that there is an outdoor service that is going to take place in the afternoon at the Islamic Center in a parking lot in a soccer field where people from the community and they're expecting a huge turnout can attend and pay their final respects to the four victims. We know that there are family members that have either arrived or in route from places like Pakistan and also from Australia who will be in attendance as well. And then after that, the four people, the victims, will be transported to a cemetery and that portion of the service will be private. As for the update on the 9-year-old boy who's been on everyone's mind, Fayez, I spoke to a representative from the community just about 15, 20 minutes ago, and he said that, you know, the boy is doing as well as he could be. Doctors are confident that he will be able to pull through. As for whether he will be able to attend the service on Saturday, again, that'll be a decision that that the family will be making. It looks like last minute on Saturday to see if he'll be able to attend.
CTV's Omar Sachedina live in London for us tonight. Thank you. And a reminder, our online team has full coverage of this story as details continue to develop. You'll find that information at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
And just ahead, outcry after a pride flag is burned outside of Mississauga High School. Police launching an investigation into the hate-motivated incident.
But first to the tightening timeline for a two-dose summer in Ontario.
The province speeding up second shots in high-risk areas. It means thousands of appointments will move up. CTV's Natalie Johnson is live with more. Natalie.
Hi, Nathan. Well, it's part of a new hotspot strategy targeting cities and regions that are seeing a rise in the highly contagious Delta variant. And depending on when you got your first dose, you may be able to book your next shot as soon as next week.
For my mom, it's Jenny Jameson.
In Thorncliffe Park, healthcare partners are wasting no time in speeding up second doses. Drop-ins will be allowed at this clinic tomorrow for anyone who received a Pfizer shot at least 21 days ago, who lives in one of 18 high-risk Toronto postal codes.
We are so relieved now. Oh, my God.
Now you feel safe. You're mighty good, making excellent progress.
But beginning Monday, eligibility for a sooner second dose will open up even further in some parts of the province to include anyone who got a first shot of Pfizer or Moderna on or before May 9th who lives in one of seven regions designated as a Delta variant hotspot. Toronto, Peel, York, Halton, Waterloo, Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph, and Porcupine.
Increasing first and second dose coverage in Delta variant areas of concern will help to minimize the risk of its spread and ultimately protect communities province-wide.
The move means that people in those regions can book their second shot 5 weeks sooner compared to the province's previous plan.
We still have neighborhoods and postal codes with greater than 10% COVID test positivity. And so ensuring that people living in these neighborhoods are getting access at workplaces or getting access at home or pop-ups is going to be crucial over the next stretch.
The expedited timeline does not, however, apply to anyone who got AstraZeneca for their first shot. Despite the fact that other provinces are reducing the time between doses for that vaccine, Ontario is maintaining a 12-week interval for anyone who got AstraZeneca, even if they switch to Pfizer or Moderna for their second dose.
We have been advised by our medical officers that we should remain at 12 weeks. As I said, that is the gold standard.
The province will make extra vaccines available to the seven Delta hotspot regions, but only once those regions use up the stock in their freezers. And mobile vaccination units that provided first doses in Toronto and Peel will set up second dose clinics beginning the week of June 20th. Reporting live in Thorncliffe Park, I'm Natalie Johnson. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thanks, Natalie. Province-wide, more than 182,000 vaccines were administered yesterday. Roughly 10.6 million shots are now in arms since the rollout began. And just shy of 1.4 million people have received both required doses and are now considered fully vaccinated.
Also today, officials shared instructions for people who received one or both doses of COVID-19 vaccine outside of the province. Residents can now register their shots through their local public health units. They'll have to provide a vaccination receipt or certificate as proof, and those records will then go into the provincial database. Once that process is complete, anyone waiting on a second dose will be eligible to book based on the recommended vaccine intervals here in Ontario.
The province is reporting a slight jump in new COVID cases compared to yesterday, but the daily figure is still well below the 1,000 mark. 590 cases are confirmed in the latest update. Ontario has now seen more than 538,000 cases since the start of the pandemic. 11 more deaths are linked to the virus, putting that figure at 8,931. And more than 522,000 cases are now considered resolved.
Here's tonight's regional breakdown with 130 cases reported in Peel and 114 in Toronto. There are 38 new cases in Hamilton, 32 in York Region and 26 in Niagara Region. 21 tests came back positive in Durham and 17 in Halton.
The final preparations are underway. In just hours, patios will be allowed to welcome back customers. Mm-hmm.
Setting the table for the first step in Ontario's long-awaited reopening. CTV's Austin Delaney is live in Yorkville tonight with more. Austin.
Somebody said to me, doesn't this look a lot like Europe? And I have to agree, it looks like a side street in Rome, but it's actually Bel Air. And on this side of Cumberland, it's closed to vehicle traffic for Cafe Tio, as the restaurants around here welcome back customers. Umbrellas are popping up all over the city. A last-minute scramble to get the patios ready to open. Hemingway's in Yorkville serving at 1 minute past midnight.
We've been closed so long. Why stay closed any longer than we need to?
Delivery trucks have been crisscrossing the city, bringing much-needed supplies to bars and restaurants after the green light to serve outside was given early.
Restaurants that need only had 3 or 4 days, so do we, and we have to get all the fresh product.
This Yorkville restaurant with little patio space out front says it was thrown a lifeline by Cafe T.O. and is allowed to put some 70 seats in the alleyway.
After the shops close after 6 o'clock, we get to take all this side, so we have all tables lined up all along here. And we have tables all lined up all along here, all the way to the end of the laneway.
On College Street, a portable patio for Cafe T.O. was being built in front of a pub.
Right now, we're incredibly busy.
The company builds the patios in Hamilton and installs them all over the province. The owner of Barrio in Leslieville will open his 3 patios tomorrow, but says it is a real scramble to find staff.
Everybody's hiring at the same time, so there's a limited amount of people that are available. And I think because of EI, some people are choosing not to come back to the workforce.
Peel's Medical Officer of Health anticipates a bump in cases after the reopening.
And we know that with any reopening, there will be an increase in contact and interaction numbers, which is why I've really requested that our community not give up the gains that we've had.
Step one of reopening includes outdoor gatherings, public events, up to 10 people, outdoor religious services, ceremonies, distance of 2 meters, indoor religious services, ceremonies, 15% capacity, non-essential retail, 15% capacity, essential select retail, 25% capacity, outdoor dining, up to 4 people per table, exceptions for larger households, outdoor fitness classes, up to 10 people. And one restaurant owner told me to be patient tomorrow and this weekend because not all the old staff is coming back and they're having to train new people on the fly. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. And it seems like we're going to get some good patio weather tomorrow, Lindsay.
Yeah, patio weather is looking good tonight at 12:01, Nathan, but also for tomorrow and the weekend too. Let's talk about our current temperatures, though. What a difference compared to the last couple of days. Gone is that oppressive humidity, and in its wake, very comfortable temperatures. It's 24 degrees right now in Oshawa and Brampton, 21 in Hamilton, thanks to a breeze off the lake, and 27 this hour in Welland. Here in the city of Toronto, it's a little bit cooler at the Toronto Islands compared to Pearson International, and tonight we're looking at a low of 16 degrees. There's those winds coming out of the east, gusting to around 30 kilometers per hour here in Toronto. A dome of high pressure for the time being, but a couple of sprinkles in the long-range forecast. We'll talk about that coming up. For now, Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. And still ahead, legislators are back at Queen's Park as the Ford government prepares to invoke the notwithstanding clause, the controversial move to restore election finance rules.
Turning first to disturbing footage circulating on social media, prompting an investigation by Peel Police.
Video of a pride flag being burned, the hateful act sparking outrage. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
You can hear laughter in the video as a pride flag is burned. The hateful and homophobic act, believed to have been carried out by students at Cawthra Park Secondary School in Mississauga, quickly making the rounds on social media.
I was disgusted. I mean, it was really, really wrong.
I heard about it through social media, and it's just kind of disappointing, you know, like upsetting that, like, it's, you know, it's Pride Month too.
Not only was the video posted online, but according to a letter from the school's principal, it was sent directly to Cawthra Park students who identify as LGBTQ2S+.
This happened in my community. It's targeted at people like me.
Former student Thomas Cappadocia says he felt a hole open in his chest when he learned what had happened.
It is awful when somebody targets you for who you are, for who you were born as. And so having that be somebody you know, I can't even begin to describe just how disgusting and how awful that would feel.
In a letter, the school says the Peel District School Board and Cawthra Park Secondary School condemn this hateful act of homophobia, transphobia, and biphobia, adding that school administration has been in contact with the affected students.
Absolutely gobsmacked and completely disgusted.
Local counselor Stephen Dasko calls this a hate crime, one which he says clearly demonstrates the need for continued education, support, and outreach.
Incidents like this just go to show us that we're not there yet, and more needs to be done.
Peel Regional Police say an investigation was launched into what they call a hate-motivated incident on June the 8th, immediately after it was reported.
Good thing there's an investigation going on now, but it's scary. It is scary to be the victim of hate.
Cappadocia says even with an investigation going on, more people need to take action, saying we all need to speak out about hate and not sweep it under the rug. Janice Golding, CTV News.
Meanwhile, there are new developments in another investigation believed to have been hate-motivated.
An assault near Hanlon's Point over the weekend. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live with more. Beth.
Nathan, I connected with David Gomez this afternoon. He told me he's in a lot of pain, having night terrors and scared to go out. Toronto police haven't announced any arrests so far.
At the Ottawa Red Blacks Stadium, the rainbow flag flies as a member of that football team faces allegations of being involved in a homophobic attack on Toronto Island. These are pictures of 24-year-old David Gomez's injuries after he was allegedly punched and kicked, resulting in a shattered face and fractured hip. CTV News is told he had surgery for both. On social media, allegations are swirling that one of the people involved was Red Blacks defensive lineman Chris Larson, who has now been suspended. CTV News has requested comment from Larson directly. As this is officially a police matter, neither the player nor the organization can speak to it further right now, said a team spokesperson. Mark Gowdy, CEO of the Red Blacks parent company, did earlier issue a lengthy statement saying, in part, diversity and inclusion are central to our organizational values, and we will try our best to use our platform to help make acts of hate and violence, including homophobia, stop. The Canadian Football League also weighing in, saying, we want to reaffirm our values. We condemn homophobia, violence, and hate. We support inclusivity and diversity. Toronto police say the attack happened at the ferry docks near Hanlon's Point around 11:30 Saturday night. They say the victim and another woman got in a disagreement with a group of people, one of whom made homophobic comments. Two men then assaulted Gomez. Toronto police say the hate crime unit is assisting investigators. Statistics show sexual orientation made up 8% of hate crime victimization in 2018, up to 13% in 2019, in the LGBTQ category 11% in 2020. Advocates say people in prominent positions are meant to be role models.
It just speaks volumes to, you know, how they are meant to carry themselves, you know, both off the field and on the field. And I think it's truly horrific.
In an online post, Gomez says, thanks everyone who reached out with flowers, warm messages, and yummy food. Your support is beyond appreciated. Gomez is now out of hospital, recovering.
Toronto police tell me it's not seeing a significant increase in hate crimes towards the LGBTQ2S+ community, but there are more incidents reported in June. I asked police if player Chris Larson, if they could confirm if he was in the group in question, and they tell me they cannot speculate on any of the alleged people involved until charges are laid. Reporting live at Toronto Police Headquarters, I'm Beth McDonnell. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. And turning next to a murder investigation in Mississauga, a woman shot and killed, her body found outside a business complex. John Musselman is live at the scene with more. John.
Well, Michelle, you'll see a black car behind me. Police came here last night just after 11:30. They found a woman on the ground and she had been shot to death.
The body of a 22-year-old woman, now identified as Marissa Radshake, was removed from the scene this morning. Peel Regional Police say they found her suffering from gunshot wounds just after 11:30 last night near this black sedan. The car was parked in the back of a commercial property near Burnenthorpe Road West and 9th Line. Police say they received multiple 911 calls about reports of gunfire.
Investigators from our Homicide and Missing Persons Bureau has taken carriage of this incident, and we are appealing for anyone with any information on this incident, witnesses, anyone that was traveling through the area with dash cam or may have heard anything. We are asking them to call investigators from the Homicide and Missing Persons Bureau.
Police sealed off the property and forensic investigators combed the ground and the vehicle for any evidence. This is a rural area. There are some businesses located nearby, but very few homes. It is just west of Highway 403.
It was like 12:30. They woke me up, just let me know that there was a situation a little bit south of us, and that they were wondering if they could look at the cameras and see if, I guess, we heard anything, right?
We spoke to one business owner with a security camera, but he tells CTV News it was too dark and his camera didn't capture anything on the road last night. A section of Burnenthorpe Road was closed during the investigation.
Now, police have released very little on suspects here or a possible motive for this murder. Anyone with information is asked to call Peel Regional Police or Crime Stoppers. Reporting live at the scene, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, John. Police have announced three arrests in a deadly shooting last month at a Mississauga restaurant. It happened May 29th at the Chickenland restaurant at the College Way and Glen Aaron Drive. 25-year-old Naeem Akil of Oakville died at the scene. His father, mother, and brother were all wounded, along with an employee. Three suspects were identified in connection with the incident, and all of them are now in custody. On Tuesday, 31-year-old Nakash Abbasi was arrested and charged with first-degree murder and five counts of attempted murder using a firearm. The day afterwards, 25-year-old Suleiman Raza of Mississauga was arrested and charged with the same offenses. And just this morning, investigators confirmed that 20-year-old Anand Nath of Mississauga was taken into custody in Montreal after a Canada-wide warrant was issued.
To politics, MPPs weren't scheduled to be in the legislature right now, but they are.
The provincial government's use of the notwithstanding clause creating controversy. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Hi, Nathan. Premier Doug Ford was not in the legislature today as his government took a historic step by invoking the notwithstanding clause. This has everything to do with the next provincial election scheduled for June 2nd, 2022. And the NDP says the government is using the People's House to benefit the Progressive Conservatives.
The solar eclipse rising over Ontario is perhaps a fitting metaphor for the machinations at Queen's Park. A rare event is taking place in which the government is using its powers in the legislature to block out a portion of the Canadian Constitution.
I will use every tool in my disposal as a House leader to ensure that this gets through the legislature as quickly as possible so that we can return those controls and those accountability measures that were in the first bill.
At issue here is the next provincial election and non-political groups that want to run negative attack ads before the vote. Those groups were limited to spending $600,000 in the 6 months before an election campaign. But the Ford government increased that limit to a full year, claiming Ontario's elections were susceptible to American-style political action committees, which spend millions to influence elections.
In Ontario, third parties were spending more to influence our elections than all other provinces and federal elections combined. Completely out of control.
But during the last election in 2018, the Progressive Conservatives benefited from the same third parties they're now looking to limit.
Can we really trust Kathleen Wynne?
Ontario Proud ran a series of negative attack ads against then-Premier Kathleen Wynne, spending nearly $500,000.
They were directly benefiting from an awful lot of this exact activity that they're now claiming is something that they're gravely concerned about. As they're putting it, it's some kind of threat to democracy. So there's a bit of hypocrisy that's wrapped up in this spin that's coming from Doug Ford and his campaign team.
The government denies that this has anything to do with muzzling its critics, but says it'll use the notwithstanding clause to overrule an Ontario court and override parts of the Constitution to pass its laws on third-party advertising limits.
This is going to silence folks completely until after the election. It is just so disgraceful.
The government expects to pass the bill on Monday.
And in order to pass the bill on Monday, the government is expediting it. They will return here to Queen's Park Friday night at 11:59 p.m. And they're going to be holding an overnight debate in the Ontario legislature. They will continue to meet through the weekend, including holding question period on Saturday before passing the bill into law on Monday. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. In Ottawa, the Commons Ethics Committee released a report today on the We Charity scandal that rocked the Trudeau government.
One of the questions that we had in this study is what does one actually have to do to break the lobbying law in Ottawa in 2021? We see that the Kielberger brothers had extensive insider access, particularly in the finance minister's office.
The report focuses on WE's connections to various members of the Liberal government and the organization's lobbying and business practices. It calls for stronger measures to protect against conflict of interest and wants the lobbying commissioner to be granted investigative powers.
Returning to our COVID-19 coverage, infections in Canada at their lowest level since September. The seven-day average of new cases was just over 1,600 as of yesterday. That's down almost one-third from just a week ago, and down 82% from the peak of the third wave in April. Canada's daily average rate of new infections also fell below the U.S. today for the first time in 2 months. Meanwhile, Moderna confirmed it will be shipping 7.1 million doses of its vaccine to Canada next week.
G7 nations will share 1 billion vaccine doses with poorer countries, but Canada has not announced any plans to donate yet.
The leaders of the wealthy democracies are gathering in Cornwall, England, for the first in-person summit since the pandemic began. Prime Minister Trudeau has arrived ahead of the three-day conference amid growing pressure to share vaccines. His government has guaranteed delivery to Canada of more than 100 million doses for the year, although giving the population two doses requires 76 million. Canada has committed $440 million to help the vaccine sharing initiative COVAX buy doses directly from the manufacturers. Today, Joe Biden announced the U.S. will donate half a billion doses to 92 lower-income nations and the African Union to speed up the end of the global pandemic. Colin DeMello made reference to it. If you're into astronomy or just happened to watch the sunrise this morning, you may have spotted a rare celestial event.
There was a special type of solar eclipse, and sky watchers and photographers were up early to make sure they didn't miss a moment.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I wasn't going to miss it.
I was very happy with how it came out. We got a clear view of it, and a safe one at that, too.
This was the incredible view from Bluffers Park of the Ring of Fire Eclipse, as it's called. The phenomenon got that name because it only happens when a new moon is at its farthest point from Earth. That means it's not big enough in the sky to fully cover the sun. In Toronto, the coverage was about 80%. And experts say that was practically a front row seat.
There are pictures coming from all over the world, and everyone's so jealous of Ontario because we have this great, great view of it. There are some magnificent pictures that are coming out on social media now that are all taken from sort of this part of the world.
This was the first solar eclipse visible from North America since August of 2017. And if you missed it, you will have another chance in a few years. A total solar eclipse will be visible from Ontario on April 8th, 2024.
Coming up is possibly the last thing you'd expect to see outside Toronto City Hall. Why a Montreal Canadiens flag is flying here in Leafs Nation.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, the hot weather has arrived, and that means many people have turned on their air conditioning. But if you live in an apartment building, you may have been told window air conditioners are no longer allowed. A tenants group says that's not the case. We investigate. That story's just ahead.
That sunrise solar eclipse had many of you reaching for your cameras as well. So we wanted to share a couple of great viewer photos tonight. This is Fabian's shot from Etobicoke. Terry captured the skyline beautifully from Port Credit. You can see it in her photo here. And you can see why this was called a partial eclipse. It was still spectacular. And how about Spencer's shot from Tilsonburg? Absolutely amazing. I love it. A big thank you to everyone who shared photos with us on social media. Here's a look at tonight at a glance. 16 degrees is our forecast low. That's close to normal, seasonal when it comes to the overnight temperature too. We'll have hints of humidity over the next couple of days, but the long range forecast is looking even cooler. Details just ahead here on CTV News.
Some landlords are now banning the use of window air conditioners following the death of a child in Toronto a year and a half ago.
But some tenants say without window air conditioning, their units can be unbearably hot in the summer, and they feel they should have the right to use one. Pat Foran has the story tonight on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Michelle and Nathan, an Etobicoke woman, says she's always used a window air conditioner in her apartment, but this year she got a letter saying it's no longer allowed. She had a stroke and uses a walker. It says her apartment is so hot, she's worried about her health.
Right now, I'm so very hot.
Maria DeLourdes Morales lives in an Etobicoke apartment building and says she can usually keep cool with a window air conditioner. But this year, her landlord told her she was no longer allowed to use one. She has health issues and fans won't keep her cool.
I'm inside the home all day, you know, the pandemic. I have a stroke. I use a walker and cannot go out. I don't know how can I survive.
Her building is a Minto property, and the company told CTV News Minto informed tenants last year only AC units placed within suite design sleeves or floor units vented to the exterior would be permitted. Minto says the change was made after an air conditioner toppled out of a window in a Scarborough apartment building, killing 2-year-old Crystal Morago in late 2019. The company says no window units are allowed unless they're over a balcony. They recommend tenants buy floor-standing air conditioning units that retail for about $400 each.
Landlords are sending out thousands of notices to tenants telling them they can't have air conditioning or window air conditioner units. And that's not true.
Tenants advocate Jordy Dent says there is no Toronto bylaw that says tenants cannot use window air conditioners. He says as long as they are safely installed and maintained, tenants should be allowed to use them.
It's incredibly dangerous right now. You've got millions of people sheltering at home. It's brutally hot. And if you're telling people that they can't have an air conditioner, people are going to die.
Minto said the safety of tenants is a top priority and that it will provide Morales with a floor-standing air conditioning unit. She says she won't be able to get through the summer without it.
Because the weather is so hot, especially now, we are not allowed to go anywhere.
And we also called Toronto's 311 and we're told you are allowed to have a window air conditioner as long as it's installed in a safe and secure manner. Anyone who is told they cannot have a window unit is advised to check the details of their lease. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Well, fortunately, there is some relief from that unbearable heat. It feels much fresher, much cooler. A lot of people like this kind of weather.
Yeah, it's more comfortable. There's also a nice little breeze as well, Lindsay.
Yeah, I think this is crowd-pleasing weather. Those who still like a little bit of heat got that today. Those who were done with the humidity also were lucky enough to say goodbye to that. It's not completely gone. Some parts of our province are still feeling quite warm even at this hour, but the long-range forecast is going to bring even more in the way of relief. Weather is brought to you by Trane. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it's hard to stop a train. Today was an absolutely gorgeous day. We had a beautiful blue sky and plenty of sunshine as well. We made it to an afternoon high of 24 degrees. Yesterday, we were 29, and you likely felt the difference between yesterday and today. The record to beat on this day was 33 degrees. Tonight, we're dropping to a low of 16. We're inching closer to what's considered normal this time of year for an overnight low, and temperature should be a degree or two cooler in other parts of the province. Tomorrow, temperature-wise, a little bit of a repeat performance in some areas. Once again, 24 for us in Toronto, still quite hot in southwestern Ontario. For example, 30 is what we're forecasting in London, and yes, it will feel even warmer than that. Not much to show you currently on the satellite and radar. We've got some active weather to our north and to our south. Potential for a couple of sprinkles of rain in some areas over the next couple of days. It's not a guarantee for us here in Toronto, and not everyone is going to see wet weather, but the potential is there. Let's take you through the next couple of days. Tomorrow, waking up, maybe a few spotty showers in eastern sections of Ontario, as well as cottage country over toward the Bruce Peninsula as well. We'll have a little bit of cloud at times tomorrow, maybe more so than we had today, but it should clear quite nicely as we make our way into the evening hours. Just a heads up that some eastern parts of the GTA could see a couple of sprinkles of rain tomorrow night. And then as we make our way into Saturday, it's the second half of the day, and especially across southwestern Ontario, where we see a little bit of wet weather moving in. That's maybe our best opportunity here in the GTA. Again, that will be Saturday night and perhaps into Sunday morning. Then Sunday afternoon is looking pretty decent. Let's talk about that long-range forecast. Overall, it's looking pretty pleasant. How does a daytime high of 21 degrees sound to you? It's going to be a little bit of a change as we make our way into Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. And I've got my eye on the long-range forecast, too, for another opportunity for wet weather that comes on Thursday with a 40% chance of rain. That's your look at the forecast for now. Michelle, I'll send it over to you.
Thanks, Lindsay. Still to come, why experts say the pandemic has more people heading to their podiatrist. A bump in bunion removal after the break. If you've ever dealt with bunions, you know how painful the growths can be.
Turns out a local podiatrist says the pandemic has sparked a boom in bunion removal. Here's our health reporter, Pauline Chan.
I've had bunions for as long as I can imagine. I've been meaning to get it done for the last 20 years.
Laura DeMetto had bunions on both feet.
My feet were always sore. They were red. They were inflamed. I couldn't wear the shoes that I wanted to wear.
A bunion is a deformity where the bones go out of alignment in the big toe joint. And it's really caused by poor mechanics of the feet that we're born with.
High heels and tight shoes can also aggravate the problem. Traditionally, they're treated with surgery.
It includes general anesthesia, very long incisions, insertion of metals like pins, wires, screws, staples, plates.
And patients can be off their feet for months while recovering. But during the pandemic, when people are working from home and don't have any dressy parties to attend, podiatrist Hartley Milchen is getting visits from patients who got their bunion consultations years ago.
I want to have my bunion done now. It's the opportune time. So we've become very overwhelmed.
Milchen says he's doing four times as many bunion cases as before the pandemic, including Demetto.
I'm probably the only person that uses dental instruments. I make cuts in the bone. I realign the bone to get rid of the malalignment.
Milchen uses only a local anesthetic, and the incisions are so small, no stitches are required.
The surgery took probably under 15 minutes, and I was able to walk out of the office on my own 2 feet.
Her bunions were corrected a month apart last fall. She was even able to walk her dogs the same evening as her procedure. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
The late Jonathan Larson is best known as the creator of Rent, and now one of his other hit musicals is getting a screen adaptation.
This is the life of Bohemia.
The first trailer is out for Netflix's adaptation of Tick, Tick, Boom. Andrew Garfield stars in the movie version of the show. It tells the story of Larson's career as a composer. The feature film is also the first ever directed by Tony Award winner Lin-Manuel Miranda.
We are also getting our first look at a new Netflix series starring Canada's own Sandra Oh. The Chair stars Oh as the first woman to lead an English department at a major university. The show also features performances by Holland Taylor and Jay Duplass. It's scheduled to start streaming in August.
Many of us remember Much Music as the place to watch music videos, and now the TV channel is coming back in a different format.
They should bring Much Music back. Yeah, they should, man.
Bell Media is teaming up with TikTok to relaunch Much Music. It's being billed as a platform for discovering groundbreaking music content and rediscovering old favorites. It will have a new generation of personalities and creators at the helm. CTV is a division of Bell Media.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. We've got what you want. Settle in for the night with some great TV. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
We're kicking off phase one of the province's reopening plans tomorrow on CP24 Breakfast. Find out what's open, where you can go, as the city begins to return to normal.
Yes.
CP24 Breakfast, where Toronto gets its everything every morning.
Unless this man, this accused, pleads guilty in the very near future, this process is not going to be over months, it's going to be over years.
Updating our top stories, a first court appearance for the man accused of murdering four members of a Muslim family in London on Sunday. He is set to return to court on Monday, while a funeral for the victims is scheduled for this weekend.
Increasing first and second dose coverage in Delta variant areas of concern will help to minimize the risk of its spread and ultimately protect communities province-wide.
The province is ramping up its vaccine rollout. Starting Monday, residents of seven hotspot regions will be able to book their second shots a month ahead of schedule.
We've been closed so long. Why stay closed any longer than we need to?
And the province will be entering step one of reopening just after midnight. The move will see the return of outdoor dining as well as non-essential retail open at limited capacity.
Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. And some restaurants aren't waiting long to welcome back patrons.
Planning to open their patios just after midnight. And that is the focus of a discussion on CP24. Tonight we're joined by co-anchors Nick Dixon and Rashmi Nair. Nick, a lot of people are eager to be on a patio. I know you're going to be talking to pub owners who are opening their patios tonight.
That's right. I mean, if you're fortunate enough to have a patio, pub owners are probably busily getting their patios ready to go tonight. So we're going to take a couple of minutes with some of them, get out of their sort of preparation plans and talk to them about what it's been like to be locked down and what their anticipation is going forward. Tonight, they can open for 2 hours, this morning, I should say, technically. And then we're also going to have a medical expert panel to talk about the second shot strategy, the potential of a fourth wave, and what they think about the fact that if you are an AstraZeneca recipient for your first shot, you're still waiting 12 weeks to get your second, unlike the rest of the population.
And Reshmi, you'll also be hearing from the federal procurement minister about a big shipment of the Moderna vaccine.
Yes, we are receiving millions of doses of vaccine into this country every week now. We've reached that point. Now Moderna is sending an influx of vaccines that we'll get at the end of this month. So we're going to talk to Anita Anand about the significance of that and to some of Nick's points. Will that change how long you have to wait for a second shot if you're an AstraZeneca first dose or looking for an mRNA? We'll discuss that on CP24 tonight.
All right. Thank you, Reshmi and Nick. CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar gained 11 basis points to 82.68 U.S. American benchmark oil was up 33 cents a barrel to close at 70.29. And the TSX Composite Index gained 47 points to close at 20,049.
The federal privacy watchdog says the RCMP broke the law when it used a new type of facial recognition software to collect personal information. Clearview AI gathers billions of images from the internet that can be used by police services, financial institutions, and other clients to identify people. Privacy Commissioner Daniel Therrien said government institutions can't collect personal information from a third party if that third party collected the information unlawfully. The RCMP's contract with Clearview was suspended last year.
Air Transat has set a date to start flying again after it halted operations in late January. Domestic and international flights will be back up and running on July 30th. Transat will also be winding down its hotel division as it tries to reach stable financial footing. The travel operator was hit hard by COVID-19 travel restrictions, but the restart plan is going over well with investors. Shares closed at their highest level since late March.
He won't hoist the Stanley Cup this season, we know that, but Austin Matthews might still take home some hardware. The NHL's top goal scorer is a finalist for the Hart Trophy. It's awarded to the player deemed to be the most valuable to his team. But the Leafs superstar will be up against some stiff competition. Oilers captain Connor McDavid is in the running for his second Hart, and Colorado Avalanche forward Nathan MacKinnon is a finalist for the second straight year.
Toronto Mayor John Tory bet his Montreal counterpart the Leafs would win the first round against the Habs. They didn't, of course, and today it was time to pay up.
Having to raise the Montreal Canadiens flag, no offense, is among the more difficult things I've had to do since I've been the mayor.
Look how big it is. Tory says he briefly thought about raising the flag in the middle of the night, but decided that wouldn't be right. So the wager also called for him to send Valérie Plante a pea-meal bacon sandwich and some local beer.
After the break, the new initiative looking to give everyone the chance to express themselves, the It Can Be Anything project in Toronto Together.
Tonight, the cautious timeline in the next phase of Canada's pandemic fight.
It's going to be joyous and fun.
The reopening relief rewards and risk after a punishing shutdown. That's later on CTV National News.
The CTV News at 6 podcast is available as a download every weeknight. And you can also listen to the show live on Newstalk 1010.
Get Toronto's top stories, breaking news alerts, and watch live. Download the CTV News app.
Now to Toronto Together, where a new film is kicking off a support program for people with intellectual disabilities.
The It Can Be Anything program is aimed at giving people with intellectual disabilities an opportunity to express themselves through art.
We just use support to integrate people. So bringing programs like this, to our athletes, to our constituents, is terrific.
The film, also titled It Can Be Anything, features the work of program co-founder Marsha Doucette's sister, Rachel. She and co-founder Ryan Bergman were inspired to create this program after noticing a lack of art programs for intellectually disabled Canadians.
Communication is tough, and sometimes it takes a really strong network around you, give it a family, and we're both fortunate to have families that support both Chris and Rachel, but it takes a bigger community, I think, to really allow them to become involved more in society.
The film is set to premiere tomorrow at 4 p.m. on the Art Gallery of Ontario's website. The AGO will also be hosting several inclusive art workshops to support the project this week and next week.
All right, Lindsay, how are things looking tonight?
Well, I'm just looking at that view behind the two of you there over Lake Ontario. Lots of people out in kayaks or in their boats. I know patios aren't quite open just yet, but it's going to be a great evening for your backyard or your balcony if you're lucky enough to have one of those. Here's the satellite and radar. Not much to show you. Plenty of sunshine, and we still have a little more time to enjoy it before that sun sets. Around home tomorrow, you might find a little more in the way of cloud cover and winds out of the east. Temperatures are going to be similar to today's, and then here's one more look at that 7-day forecast. We do have a couple of chances of some spotty showers as we make our way into the weekend. That's your weather. Nathan and Michelle, over to you.
All right. Thanks, Lindsay. Be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
And you can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight with Rashmi Nair and Nick Dixon begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
Good night.